This is Fresh Air. TV watching Americans, in love with Downton Abbey and the Great British Bake Off, and their British counterparts hooked on The Big Bang Theory and CSI, have one thing in common, a fascination with the odd ways they talk on the other side of the pond. Those differences are the subject of a new book by an American linguist who lives in the UK. Our linguist, Jeff Nunberg, has read the book and has these thoughts on our shared language.
Great Britain and the United States are two nations separated by a common language. That's the stock witticism anyway, but if you ask me, it gets things backwards. Great Britain and the U.S. are more like two nations united by a divided language, or more precisely, by their mutual obsession with their linguistic differences. For 200 years now, writers from each nation have been tirelessly picking over the language of the other with a mix of amusement, condescension, derision, and horror. That fraught relationship is the subject of an engaging new book called The Prodigal Tongue. It's by Lynn Murphy, an American linguist based in England who keeps her eye on the way that their lot and our lot talk, and just as important, on what people make of the differences. The book is subtitled The Love-Hate Relationship of British and American English, and there's plenty of each to go around. We tend to be indulgent of each other's linguistic quirks and foibles, but only as long as they remain exotically foreign. We Americans are charmed by quaint Mary Poppinsisms like gobsmacked. The British admire what Virginia Woolf called our expressive, ugly, vigorous slang. She singled out rambunctious and flip-flop. But the cordiality wears thin when words emigrate to the other side of the proverbial pond and bring a wash of local insecurities bubbling to the surface. American Anglophilia has always been an aspirational vice. Time was when Harvard professors insisted that their students adopt the British broad ah sound in class and half as a sign of intellectual cultivation. Nowadays, Britishisms usually enter American speech via members of the coastal smart set who reckon the words make them sound trendy or posh. They describe their iPad as a nice piece of kit, or they say they get peckish around tea time, and straight away the op-ed pages fill with alarms about Anglo creep and America's slippery slope into Britishisms. Some of those items ultimately trickle out to the linguistic hinterland, whimsical words like kerfuffle and useful ones like vetting, and for that matter, trendy, which is a legacy of Britain's swinging 60s. But in the end, modern British has contributed far fewer words to everyday American speech than Spanish has. Think loco and pronto, macho and nachos, mañana and nada. The British have a harder time of it. They've been feeling besieged by Americanisms since the era of the earliest talkies, when people took to using okay in place of righto. The Beatles sang She Loves You, Yeah, 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 to the disappointment of Paul McCartney's father, who said he would have preferred a proper British yes, yes, yes. Now the young people greet each other with hi guys and use awesome where their elders would have said marvelous. The ubiquitous American media plays some role in this. Murphy notes that British children live part of their lives in a virtual America, home of hip-hop and Disney princesses. But then Americans have been exposed to plenty of British popular culture without picking up much of its slang. The kids who grew up beguiled by the Harry Potter books and movies didn't come away from them saying, "We had a brilliant time," or calling each other mate. The young Britons who embrace guys and awesome are drawn by the same image of America as a classless society that led earlier generations to embrace blue jeans and rock and roll. You might call them Yankophiles or Americophiles, except that British English has no such words. But notwithstanding the enticements of Disney and hip-hop there, or of Masterpiece Theater here, it's a safe bet the British and Americans will sound reassuringly foreign to each other for ages to come. As Murphy points out, the influx of Americanisms has left vast stretches of the British vocabulary untouched. Future American visitors to the UK will be as baffled as ever when they shop for groceries or hardware, not to mention when the conversation turns to politics or sex. And even those borrowed words have a way of going native. The British borrowed hot dog from us, but use it for any sausage on a bun, just as we borrowed cheers from them, but don't use it for thanks, just as a way of closing an email. Anyway, none of those differences would be interesting if we didn't share a core vocabulary, not the words for vegetables or car parts, but the language that grows out of our common literary tradition. That's the heritage that enables us all to enjoy both Zadie Smith and Philip Roth, not to mention writers from the other nations who are part of the same conversation. We basically all expect to understand each other, which is why we find it so curious to realize that sometimes we don't.
Jeff Nunberg is a linguist who teaches at the University of California, Berkeley School of Information. Tomorrow on Fresh Air.
Okay, so growing up can be a little bit scary and weird.
My guest will be Bo Burnham, the writer and director of the new film Eighth Grade, about a girl with social anxiety who makes YouTube videos about how to be confident and make friends. Burnham became a YouTube sensation when he was a teenager and YouTube was still new. I hope you'll join us. Fresh Air's executive producer is Denny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Salad, Phyllis Myers, Sam Brigger, Lauren Krenzel, Heidi Simon, Teresa Madden, Mooj Zadie, Thea Chaloner, and Seth Kelly. Our engineer today is Adam Staniszewski. I'm Terry Gross.